Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Like Gravity by Julie Johnson, narrated by Renee Chambliss. Prologue, 14 years ago.
Mommy, can I have the pink bubblegum, please?
I held up the roll, offering her a glimpse of the round bubble tape container clasped in my small hand. Bubble tape was the best kind of gum. Every first grader knew that. Mommy didn't answer. She was humming, a small smile rounding her lips as she handed packages of food from our cart to the grocery lady. I turned my attention back to the bubble gum, crossing toothpick-like arms in front of my chest as I eyed the other options. The checkout line with all the brightly packaged candy was always my favorite part of food shopping. Mommy, I said, louder this time, determined to get her attention.
What, sweetheart? She murmured distractedly. Can I please get the pink gum tape? All the girls in my class eat it after lunch.
Sure, B. Here, hand it up to the nice lady so we can pay for it, okay? I stretched my hand above my head to pass the gum to the grocery lady. Even on my tiptoes, it was hard to see her face. She leaned forward to pluck the container from my grasp and smiled down at me. Her teeth were streaked with pink from her lipstick, and her face was wrinkled like an apple, but she seemed nice.
And how old might you be? She asked.
I'll be 7 in a few months, I boasted. I'm in the first grade.
Oh, how wonderful, she beamed. You must be so proud, she added to Mommy.
Oh, yes, of course. Mommy smiled, handing the last package to the lady. While Mommy paid, I wandered down towards our packed cart, peeking into the clear plastic shopping bags and hoping to spot the telltale fuchsia gum container.
Come on, Brooklyn, Mommy said, steering the cart one-handed towards the parking lot. She held out the other hand for me to grab, pulling me close by her side as we walked through the automatic doors and out to our car. I slipped my hand into hers, squeezing tight. Smiling down at me, she gently swung our interlaced fingers back and forth. The air was thick with August humidity, and my pink Hello Kitty t-shirt seemed to fuse to my skin as we walked through the parking lot. The wheels on our cart weren't working right. They squealed loudly in protest as Mommy wrestled them back onto a straight path. I giggled at her efforts. Her fingers remained tight on mine until we reached the SUV. Leaving the cart by the trunk, she scooped me into her arms, tickling my sides relentlessly. I screeched and squirmed in her grasp, loving every bit of her attention.
So, you think it's nice to laugh at Mommy when she struggles with a cart, huh? She laughed. Not so funny now, is it, Bee?
I'm sorry, I squealed breathlessly, giggling even as the tickle torture came to an end.
She carried me around to the back door and deposited me into my booster seat.
Oof, you're getting too heavy for me to carry you around, she complained. Pretty soon you won't have to use the booster at all. You're getting so big.
She snapped my seatbelt into place, giving it an extra tug to check that it was safe, and dropped a quick kiss on my forehead.
I've got to put the food bags in the trunk real quick, but then how about we get some ice cream on the way home, Bumblebee?
Mommy asked, using her favorite nickname for me.
Yes, I exclaimed, my mind already busy picturing a chocolate sundae topped with a mountain of whipped cream and rainbow sprinkles.
Okay, I'll be right back, love. She smiled, ruffling my dark hair one last time before closing the door. She walked back around to the cart, and I could hear her humming as she loaded the groceries into the SUV. Suddenly remembering my gum, I twisted around in my seat to face the open trunk.
Mommy, can I have my bubble gum now? I called,
easing the tight seat belt away from my throat so I could breathe easier. When she didn't answer, I unbuckled, turned fully around in my booster, and peered through the trunk space to where she stood. She'd stopped putting away the bags and instead stood frozen with her hands held out in the air in front of her. It seemed too still. too quiet without her cheerful humming. She looked scared, and Mommy never looked scared, not even when I told her there were monsters in my closet or under my bed. Something wasn't right. I'd just opened my mouth to ask what was wrong when I spotted the man. He stood a few feet away from Mommy, the food-filled cart abandoned in the space between them.
"Give me the keys," he sneered at Mommy, his voice muffled by the black hood covering his mouth.
His eyes, the only part of his face not hidden by the mask, glared darkly. He sounded mean, like one of the villains in my Saturday morning cartoons. I didn't like him, and I could tell Mommy didn't either. Clutching a black duffel bag tightly in one hand, he shifted back and forth from one foot to the other. His eyes kept darting to the liquor store behind him, the one where Mommy sometimes got the bottles of wine she drank with dinner. I wasn't allowed to have it. She said it was a grown-up drink. Mommy's eyes flickered over to the back seat and locked on my wide-eyed gaze for a short second. Her head shook slightly back and forth in the tiniest of movements, and I knew she was trying to tell me to keep still and quiet. I wanted to ask what was happening and who that angry man was, but I did as she asked.
"Are you fucking deaf? I said give me the keys. Do I look like I'm fucking around, lady?"
The man was yelling now, striding closer to Mommy and looking angrier than ever. Her eyes broke away from mine as she straightened her shoulders and faced the man once more. "No," she said, her voice sad. Why was she so sad?
"Your choice, then," he said,
raising a hand up from his side and pointing a gun at Mommy's face. Before I could make a sound, he fired a single bullet into her forehead and watched silently as she crumpled to the cement.
"Stupid bitch," he muttered.
I sat frozen in place, unable to look away from Mommy, bleeding in the parking lot, watching with wide eyes as he pried the keys from her hand and slammed the trunk hatch closed. Racing around the SUV, he hopped into the driver's seat, Mommy's seat, and quickly started the engine. He peeled out of the parking lot without a backward glance at the blood-stained pavement. I turned slowly back around in my booster, trembling with fear and disbelief, and watched as he tossed the gun on the front passenger seat, followed by a duffel bag that was overflowing with crumpled money. Tears blurred my vision and tracked slowly down my face, but I remembered Mommy shaking her head at me and somehow managed to stay quiet. For her. Never once did the man look behind him and notice the small girl whose whole world had just ended, crying in the back seat.
Chapter 1. The Barren Moon. The panicked scream that burst from my throat was a tribute to a long-remembered terror, one undimmed by the passage of time. The 6-year-old within me cried out in desperation as I was ripped from the nightmare. The dream had been my nightly companion for 14 years, a constant reminder of the day everything in my life changed. As if I could have forgotten. There was no doubt that the events would remain etched permanently into my memory, an unwanted tattoo I hadn't requested and could never remove, even if the nightmares had stopped. Somehow, though, I knew they wouldn't. If anything, they were getting worse, becoming more vivid and frequent with each passing year. I wiped the gathering beads of perspiration from my brow, pulled my damp hair up into a loose ponytail, and untangled the twisted sheets from my legs. The small glow from the nightlight beside my bed warded away shadows that otherwise threatened to consume me. Focusing on the warm, mellow light, I tried to push the memories from my mind. Although I was well practiced in driving away the nightly terrors, it took more effort than I liked to admit
for my mind to settle and my heart rate to stop thundering in my chest like a goddamned cavalry charge. Dragging a shaky breath into my lungs, I swung my legs to the floor and padded out of my small room. The kitchen's icy linoleum tiles were uncomfortable under my bare feet, and I hurried to pour myself some water from the tap before tiptoeing back to the warmth of my bed. I sipped my water after slipping back beneath the covers, searching for the book I always kept within reach on my nightstand. Any hopes of more rest tonight were futile. After the nightmare inevitably hit, I could never relax my mind enough to sleep. Sometimes I'd get lucky, and the dream wouldn't rear its ugly head until near dawn, allowing me a few solid hours of rest. Other nights, like tonight, I wasn't so lucky. A glance at my cell phone informed me that it was only 2:37 a.m., leaving me with almost 6 hours until my first class of the semester began. Great way to start sophomore year, Brooklyn, I thought bitterly. Overtired and grumpy. Oh, and dark under-eye circles are so in this year. The near-constant bruise-like circles that lined my eyes were usually manageable with the help of some quality foundation. Most people would never notice them at all, and those who did would never discover their origin. Holding people at arm's length was easier, and, in the long run, saved everyone a lot of unnecessary hurt and heartache. I'd never been one to reach out to others for companionship or comfort. Those who gravitated in my social orbit were either blissfully self-involved or simply uninterested in my past. Anyone who pushed me for more was dropped like a bad habit. I wouldn't really say that I had friends. Acquaintances, maybe, but not friends. Friends usually wanted to know personal information. They liked to ask questions. And that made friends something I really couldn't afford to keep. There was one exception to this rule, and that was Lexi. Then again, Lexi didn't follow any of the rules she made for her own life, so I guess I shouldn't have been surprised when she broke all mine as well. She'd spun into my life like a tornado, uprooting everything in her path and creating chaos from the fragile illusion of normalcy I'd tried to reconstruct after my mother's murder. In the second grade, on my first day at a new school, Lexi had declared she liked my blue sparkly backpack and that we would be friends. And so we were. It's rare that Lex doesn't get her way. People are drawn to her as if she exudes some invisible magnetic force, pulling them in and making it impossible to deny her anything. She's tall, with fiery red hair and light blue eyes that constantly glint with mischief. In many ways, she's my opposite. While she towers at 5'10", I barely hit 5'5" in my tallest pair of stilettos. Her bright copper mane bobs around her shoulders like a halo of light. My dark brown-black loose waves tumble almost to my waist. Her freckled skin glows with pale luminescence. My natural olive tones leave me looking slightly tan even in the heart of winter. The biggest difference between us, though, isn't detectable if you only look skin deep. Because below the surface, where no one can see, something is broken inside me. Or maybe not broken, but definitely missing. Hell, maybe I never possessed it at all. Because it's indisputable that Lexi is warm, glowing, and vivacious. Her eyes dance with that indelible spark of life. Instead, I am cold, empty of that inner glow, and utterly unable to make my emerald eyes appear anything but lifeless and guarded. Comparing Lexi to myself was like comparing the sun to the moon. Her, a warm, life-producing star around which everyone orbits, and me, a solitary, barren moon, brightened only by others' reflected light and riddled with craters. With a sigh of resignation, I pulled back from the spiral of depressive thoughts I swirled into whenever I compared myself to Lexi. She'd been my best friend, my only friend, from age 8 on. We'd even applied to college together, and, after a miserable freshman year of on-campus housing and randomly assigned roommates, we were about to be sophomores with our very own hole-in-the-wall apartment. Our two-bedroom, double-bath suite took up the entire second floor of an ancient, dilapidated, Victorian-style home, which had been roughly chopped up to accommodate student renters. Yes, it was a dump. And yes, the hot water rarely worked perfectly. But it was ours, and the rent was only $450 a month, far more affordable than some of the swankier new properties littering the student housing neighborhood. The downstairs neighbors kept to themselves. We'd yet to meet them, and we'd moved in a month ago. Conveniently, we didn't have to cut through their apartment to reach the stairs, as our landlord had constructed a rickety, steep outdoor stairway leading up to our second-floor balcony. Cobbled together with plywood, it probably wasn't the safest entryway, but it served its purpose. State universities generally draw in all types. Jocks, preps, nerds, princesses. With nearly 20,000 undergrad on campus, I'm sure some people felt lost, overwhelmed by the crush of academia. Where others may have felt alone, I reveled in the anonymity. Here, I had no past. No one knew my story. If I felt the urge to vanish into the crowd, faceless and disconnected, no one would even glance up from their own lives long enough to notice. It was the exact opposite of my high school experience, and it was everything I had hoped for when I'd applied. Crawling down to the foot of my bed, I pushed open the window to let some of the humid Virginia air creep in. The late August night was dark and quiet. The bars had let out hours ago, and no one loitered on the street. Most people would be getting up early tomorrow, eager to start the new semester. After about a week of attending every class and taking copious notes, what I called the good student syndrome would eventually wear off most undergrads. The end of early semester diligence generally marked the launch of party season, and consequently, the end of quiet nights on my bar-riddled street. Taking advantage of the undisturbed night, I scooted slowly off the foot of my bed and out onto the slate roof stretching directly below my open window. The rooftop was nearly flat, wide enough for me to lie with my, albeit short, legs fully extended. Technically, it served to shelter the wraparound porch below me from the unrelenting Virginia elements. But in my mind, the roof was created especially for me. It was my special spot, my private nook, the one place where I could block out the rest of the world and feel safe. Safe. I guess it shouldn't seem like such an unattainable state. I'm sure it isn't for normal people. But I had accepted long ago that I was not, nor would I ever be, a normal girl. After the incident 14 years ago, I'd been taken into state custody until my biological father could be notified. My mother had never wanted anything to do with him, and, as he was long gone by the time she'd discovered she was carrying me, she'd never tracked him down. I spent the first 6 years of life believing that it would always be just the two of us, that we didn't need a man to make us a family. And, in the years after, I'd started to believe that I didn't need a family at all. Since she'd never informed him of his fatherly duties, after my mother's death, there was some confusion about what to do with me. It took Child Protective Services nearly 6 months to find the man who was listed on my birth certificate. The delay, apparently, due to his extended business trip to Beijing, left me stranded for months without a guardian. As my mother had no living relatives, I was placed into a group foster home until my father could be bothered to collect me. Most of my memories from that time are inaccessible to me.
I'm not sure whether I forcibly blocked them out or involuntarily repressed them, but whatever the case, that time in my life remains a blur. Some images are clearer than others. I can almost still hear the sympathetic voices of the social workers and doctors as they explained to me that life as I knew it was over. The all-consuming despair I'd felt at the loss of my mother had never really gone away. After the incident, I know I didn't speak to anyone for several months. The foster mother I'd been placed with made sure that I ate and dressed each day. A psychologist stopped by several times each week to chart my progress in her small state-issued notebook, assuring me that everything would be okay. But really, what else could she say? Nothing was okay. I was a 6-year-old ward of the state who'd witnessed the violent murder of the only source of love I'd ever known. I would never be okay again, despite the shrink's reassurances. Throughout the years, I'd seen a never-ending parade of therapists, psychologists, and psychiatrists, all equally eager to get a glimpse inside my twisted adolescent mind. These consultations invariably proceeded the same way, with them prompting me to speak about my childhood trauma, and me sitting on a slightly uncomfortable leather chair, staring at the clock in brooding silence. After the first few sessions of unrelenting taciturnity, my shrink of the week would inevitably become frustrated, accuse me of burying my feelings, and claim that I would remain spiritually lost or damaged until I battled some bullshit inner emotional war. What I didn't say during all those weeks of silence was that no amount of soul-searching would fix my past. There was no magical band-aid I could stick on my heart, no special glue I could use to make myself whole again. I had shattered to pieces like a fragile vase on concrete. Some fragments could be roughly cobbled back together, but many of my vital parts had simply turned to dust, pulverized and scattered by the first gust of wind. Leaning back on my hands, I closed my eyes and pulled a deep breath in through my nose. The summer night smelled of fresh-cut grass and a faint hint of the coming autumn. There was a slight chill in the breeze, rustling the leaves of the maple tree nearest the house and sending goosebumps skittering up my arms. I rubbed them absent-mindedly, my eyes scanning from the maple's graceful sloping branches down to the quiet street below. Shit, what the hell is that? Correction, who the hell is that? My pulse immediately began to pound in my veins as my eyes confirmed that there was, in fact, someone standing in the dimly lit street, watching me. My muscles tensed up, and I froze like a deer in headlights, a naive prey trapped neatly in a predator's lair. It was definitely a man, though I could only make out a silhouette as the nearest working street lamp was a half block away. The shoulders were too broad, the build too tall, to be anything but male. Or it was possibly one of the steroid-abusing female swimmers from China's Olympic team, I thought to myself, nearly snorting aloud at the thought. Yeah, Brooklyn, that's totally probable. My brief moment of levity died, and an irrational sense of dread commandeered my senses. I remained frozen, unsure whether I should move back inside. Could he see me? Was he watching me? Surely it was too dark for the stranger to notice a relatively small girl perched on a rooftop in the dark. I could see the small glowing cherry of his cigarette flare brighter whenever he brought it up to take a drag. The rest of the street remained empty, yet the man continued to lean against his motorcycle, a Harley from the looks of it, seemingly waiting for someone or something. Clearly he was not waiting for me or watching me, I reasoned. I'd never seen him before in my life. Though I couldn't see his face in the darkness, I knew simply by his build,
his choice of transportation, and the smoke billowing in his lungs that we didn't exactly run in the same social circles. Still, I wasn't about to sit outside alone in the middle of the night, dressed only in the skimpy tank top and cotton shorts I'd slept in, when there was a random man lurking in front of my house. It was time to go back inside, preferably without drawing any undue attention to myself. Channeling my inner Sydney Bristow, I slid my hands back until my fingertips grazed the edge of the windowsill. Very slowly, I moved my body backwards, keeping my eyes trained on the shadowed man. When he had no reaction to my covert movements, I felt the sense of leaden panic ease from my chest. He hadn't noticed me. He wasn't even looking at me. Bond. Brooklyn Bond. More confidently, I pivoted my legs and slid them inside the window, my knees sinking into my plush down comforter. I glanced down once more at the man in the street as I began to shift my torso inside, my hands braced against the windowsill. Through the darkness, I felt our eyes meet. It wasn't as if I could physically see his eyes, but somehow I knew they were staring directly into mine. So much for my theory that he couldn't see me. I watched as he took a final drag on his cigarette, moved his hands to his forehead, and sent me a mocking salute, as if to acknowledge my departure from the roof. My eyes tracked the movement of his hand, unmistakably identified by the dim glow of his cigarette, and I hastily moved the rest of my body inside, locking the window shut behind me. What a creep! Back in the safety of my bedroom, my fear quickly faded. Whoever he was clearly pleased with the fact that he'd managed to make me so uncomfortable simply by loitering. It was probably just some stupid fraternity brother waiting for his sorority counterpart to stumble outside for a late-night hookup. It didn't have anything to do with me. At least, that's what I told myself when I glanced out the window a minute later and saw that the motorcycle had vanished completely. A few hours later, I perched on one of our kitchen island bar stools and sipped my coffee greedily. Ah, caffeine, sweet nectar of the gods. The weak morning sunshine trickled in through an overhead skylight, illuminating our paint-chipped cabinets and mismatched furniture. My fingers absently moved across the marred countertop, tracing a collection of scratches gouged out by the last decade of tenants. Lexi shuffled into the kitchen, her red hair still mussed from sleep, and her feet stuffed into a pair of hideous green frog slippers.
"Coffee," she muttered.
Lexi was not exactly what you'd call a morning person. "Already brewed," I reported, hiding a smile behind my coffee mug as I took in the sight of her disheveled bedhead and rumpled pajamas.
"You're a saint," she said,
pouring herself a steaming cup and inhaling deeply as the aroma reached her nose. "I thought we decided to burn those slippers after seventh grade along with your collection of Beanie Babies and NSYNC posters," I observed sarcastically. Lexi simply glared over at me, unwilling to be baited into a response.
"How are you always dressed and perfect? I still have to shower before class at 8. What time is it anyway?" she asked.
"To answer your first question, I've been up all night and had plenty of time to get dressed. And as for the second," I glanced at the digital microwave clock, "it's 6:57. Lexi grimaced in sympathy at the thought of my sleepless night. Then again, that girl could sleep 15 hours a day, and it probably still wouldn't be enough for her. Her bed was quite possibly her favorite place in the world.
"Wait, shit, it's already 7? Lexi exclaimed, jumping up from her bar stool and nearly upending her coffee in the process. "Never be ready in time. Perfection doesn't just happen. It takes time, Brooklyn. I guess I'll be late for my first class. Shit," she cursed again, racing out of the kitchen.
"The professor will probably just go over the syllabus anyway. Nothing crucial," I called down the hall after her. Not that it mattered. Whether she had 5 minutes or 40, Lexi could pull together a polished look most of us could only achieve with the help of trained makeover specialists. Somehow, she even made Bedhead look attractive. Hell, if Lexi went to class wearing those damn frog slippers, half the female student body would be rocking them within the week. It seemed ironic that, thanks to my sleepless nights, I had hours to get ready when I rarely needed more than 10 minutes to do my hair and makeup. As for picking clothes, I'd never been one to meticulously plan or accessorize my outfits. I usually just threw on my standard combo of jeans, a tank top, and flip-flops. As for the rest, after concealing my dark under-eye shadows, dabbing on a touch of mascara and lip gloss, and letting my dark waves tumble freely, I was ready to go. I didn't understand what could possibly take Lexi so long. Throughout the years, she'd frequently been frustrated by my utter lack of interest in clothes, makeup, and shopping. As per my best friend's duties, I'd served as her dressing room sounding board for many years as she tirelessly weighed the pros and cons of a particular dress or pair of heels. I drew the line, however, at letting her pick out clothes for me. As a fashion merchandising major, she was constantly trying to get me to deviate from my boring girl-next-door look, but I didn't see the point. My clothes were just fine, even if they lacked designer labels or avant-garde flair. I considered pouring myself another cup of coffee, but decided against it. 2 cups was my limit, any more and I'd be shaky and on edge for the rest of the day. Wandering back into my bedroom, I double-checked that I had some empty notebooks and a copy of my class schedule tucked neatly into my backpack. I'd have 3 classes today: criminal justice, sociology, and public speaking. Joy. The university's pre-law degree track encompassed a widely varied array of courses, most of which were supremely boring and full of brown-nosing, argumentative lawyers-to-be. Can't wait, I rolled my eyes. Sophomore year, here I come. Lexi offered a running fashion commentary as we walked the 3 blocks from our apartment to campus. Mostly I just listened and tried to keep a straight face. What is that girl wearing? Lexi whispered, clearly outraged as she unsubtly pointed at the girl walking a few steps in front of us. It's like Rory stepped right off the set of Gilmore Girls. She shook her head in disbelief. You've been watching reruns on ABC Family again, haven't you? I accused. Psh, Brooke, who are you kidding? I own the box set. You have so many issues. I know, but that's why you love me, she sang, throwing 1 arm around my shoulders and propelling me faster down the sidewalk. Lex, your legs are at least 6 inches longer than mine, I complained, struggling to match her increased pace. I know, but I think I see Finn up ahead, she said, peering over Rory's shoulder to catch a glimpse of whatever boy had caught her eye. Evidently unsatisfied with the view, she tugged me around the plaid-wearing Gilmore and nearly head-first into a stop sign, refusing to slow down even when I squealed in protest and tried to wrench myself from her grip. She didn't even bother to acknowledge my struggles, and after several more unsuccessful escape attempts, I stopped fighting. Allowing myself to be dragged along, I heaved a martyred sigh and resigned myself to my fate. And who, may I ask, is Finn? That caught her attention. Her head whipped around so fast, I was instantly reminded of the Exorcist head-spinning scene. What do you mean, who is he? Do you ever listen when I talk? Wait, no, don't answer that. She glared down at me, still walking at a breakneck pace. He's only the most attractive specimen of manhood on this campus, the star of every sorostitute's fantasies. Sorostitute? Think sorority plus prostitute. Kinda catchy, right? Lexi smiled for a brief second before slipping back on her sternest, most disapproving frown. Geez, Brookie, I know you have zero interest in gossip, but at the very least, you need to recognize the drool-inducing men on this campus. They're few and far between.
Sorry. Please continue describing said specimen of manhood, I requested, with considerable sarcasm.
Well, he's beautiful, and completely unattainable, of course. I mean, he sleeps around, don't get me wrong, but he doesn't stick around. It's a hit-it-and-quit-it deal from what I hear, she gushed. He's a senior. He transferred here last year.
Lexi continued to scan the sidewalk ahead of us, hoping to keep her elusive target within sight. Apparently, we were stalkers now. No wonder this boy didn't stick around. If Lexi was any indication, the girls at this school really did not understand boundaries.
That's definitely him, straight ahead, she squealed,
her voice at least 3 octaves higher than normal. I couldn't see over the heads of the 3 girls walking directly ahead of us, and thus was denied a glimpse at Lexi's new obsession.
What are you going to do if you ever catch up to him, genius? I panted, slightly out of breath.
In lieu of answering, Lexi yanked me sideways, successfully passing the cluster of girls and whipping me into the direct path of an unseen fire hydrant. I pulled back, digging in my heels and trying desperately to slow my pace, but Lexi's momentum made it impossible to avoid the oncoming collision. Crashing into the hydrant at full speed, the wind was knocked from my lungs and I sailed into the air. I only had time enough to throw my hands in front of my face and squeeze my eyes shut before the pavement rushed up to meet me.
Chapter 2. Karma Points. There was something wet trickling into my eyes and down the side of my face. It was dark. My eyes felt heavy, like they'd been glued shut. I tried to take a deep breath, wincing in pain as air filled my sore lungs.
Take small breaths for now. That was a pretty nasty spill you took, a deep voice said quietly, close to my ear.
That's definitely not Lexi. Experimentally, I took a small breath in through my nose and held it inside my lungs, relieved that there was no sharp, burning sensation this time. Releasing the breath, I slowly began to gather my senses. I was still lying on the pavement, judging by the cold, hard surface beneath me, but my head was cradled by something soft.
"Can you open your eyes?" the voice asked, huskily imploring me to try.
I slowly pried my eyelids open, allowing a slitted view of the sky to come into focus. Reaching up to brush the damp hair away from my face, I was surprised when my fingers came away covered in blood.
There's a cut on your temple. It doesn't look too deep. Even superficial head wounds bleed a lot. You'll be fine, the voice assured me. That'll be an impressive goose egg, though.
I tried to sit up, immediately regretting my decision as the world began to spin around me. Hands clamped onto my upper arms, forcing me slowly back down to rest against the broad chest of my rescuer.
Don't try to sit up. You could have a concussion. You need to stay still until the ambulance gets here.
Ambulance? I croaked, my voice scratchy with panic.
Your friend, the redhead, is calling for one right now.
Tell her to stop, I pleaded. Please? I just need to go to the student health center. I don't need an ambulance. I turned my head up, finally meeting the dark eyes of my rescuer. Please, I repeated, my green eyes staring into the darkest set of blue irises I'd ever seen. They were the deepest shade of cobalt, barely distinguishable from his black pupils. Unusual eyes. I don't do well with hospitals, I admitted, looking away from his penetrating stare.
Fine, whatever you say, he agreed,
somewhat uncertainly, frowning as he cradled my shoulders with one arm. Shrugging out of his black leather jacket, he wadded it into a ball, gently shifted my head off his chest, and laid me down on the makeshift cushion. I shifted my eyes to follow as he got up, walked over to Lexi, and took the phone from her hand. He spoke rapidly into it, glancing back in my direction several times before hanging up. In my semi-dazed state, I only registered his tall frame and dark hair before letting my eyes flutter closed once more. "Hey, you still alive down there?" his deep voice chuckled. I moaned noncommittally in response. "I'm going to pick you up and carry you to student health. It's only a few buildings down from here, okay?" he asked, not waiting for an answer, as he gently hooked his arms beneath my knees and scooped me up like a child. "At least you picked a convenient place to wipe out." I felt his laughter rumble through his body as he carried me along, seemingly unaffected by my weight. Cradled against his chest, I opened my eyes again to look for Lexi. She was walking directly beside us, her eyes trained on my face. As soon as she saw that my eyes were open, the apologies began flowing from her in a torrent, causing my already aching head to pound.
"Oh my God, Brooklyn, are you okay? I am so sorry. I owe you big time. Please don't die. I'll buy you endless Starbucks for a month, as many venti chai lattes as you can handle. I promise, I didn't mean to. That hydrant came out of nowhere, and you just went flying. Oh my God, I've never been so scared in my whole life. And you have a cut on your head. Don't worry, it's by your hairline. You can totally cover it with your bangs. Are you sure you're okay?"
I swear she never even took a breath. It might have been impressive if I wasn't bleeding from the head and very possibly concussed.
"I'm sure she'll be better once you stop yammering at her," the guy's voice scolded from above me.
"Oh, right," Lexi whispered, looking suddenly chagrined. "I'm so sorry, Brookie. I'll be quiet now, I promise."
"I'm fine, Lex," I mumbled, turning my face away from the bright sunlight and into my savior's shoulder. When I inhaled, I got a whiff of his cologne or aftershave, a heady scent of autumn leaves and crisp apples. He smelled like fall, my favorite season. I giggled aloud at the thought, recognizing almost immediately that I was delirious and, in all likelihood, suffering from a concussion. Suddenly, we were walking up steps and through a set of glass doors. The health desk receptionist took one look at us before calling for a nurse on the intercom, simultaneously directing us toward a curtained-off section of the room. Laying me down gently on a cot, the guy moved my hair away from my eyes and grinned down at me, a dimple appearing in one cheek.
"Well, this definitely fulfills my annual act of kindness quota," he quipped. "At least, I think helping someone oblivious enough to trip over a fire hydrant will count."
His eyes crinkled up in laughter as he joked at my expense. Rude.
"Careful," I warned, wagging my finger back and forth at him. "Making fun of the injured is a definite deduction of karma points."
"I'll take my chances. You got blood on my favorite shirt, by the way," he said, gesturing unhappily toward the bloodstain now marring the band insignia on his dark gray t-shirt. "I mean, I knew walking and talking simultaneously posed a challenge for you sorority girls, but at least try to remember to avoid the hydrants. You know, those red, shiny things. In the future." "Think you can manage that, sweetie?" he mocked.
In an instant, any gratitude I'd felt toward this stranger vanished, replaced by anger and more than a little embarrassment. Not only had he insulted my intelligence, he'd equated me to, as Lexi would say, a sorostitute.
"Oh, I'm just so sorry. Next time I'm bleeding from the head, I'll be sure to direct it at someone else," I snapped, my voice trembling with indignation.
"I'd appreciate that," he bantered back. "Now, as fun as this has been, I really need to go. Watch out for those hydrants, kiddo. Next time I might not be there to save you."
Kiddo? Who the hell did this guy think he was? "I don't recall asking for your help." I glared up at him icily. I'd typically say thank you, but at this point, I think I'd have preferred to be left to bleed out in the street.
"You're welcome."
He grinned back at me, again showing off that infuriatingly cute dimple as he retreated backward toward the door. As he turned, he spotted Lexi making a beeline for my cot with a nurse in tow.
"Enjoy your time with the redhead. I don't think I've ever heard someone talk that fast in my life," he noted,
one eyebrow quirking up at the thought.
"Oh, and before I forget, you owe me a dark gray apophobic treason t-shirt, size large."
With a final wink at me, he spun and walked to the glass entryway, disappearing out into the sunshine before I could even contemplate a comeback. I lay in stunned silence, slowly processing the fact that he'd just sauntered out, leaving nothing but his freaking t-shirt order behind. What an asshole! Shock from the accident had worn off several minutes ago. In my anger, I hadn't even noticed that the aching in my head had mostly subsided. The nurse quickly determined that I did not, in fact, have a concussion, just a severely unattractive lump on my temple and a small cut by my hairline. With an efficiency that attested to years of patching up reckless college kids, the nurse cleaned the blood from my face, placed a small bandage over the cut, and sent me promptly on my way to class with an ice-filled compress to reduce the swelling. My brush with death wouldn't even make me late for criminal justice. Damn. In a rare moment of silence, Lexi and I stepped outside and slowly retraced our steps to the accident site. My backpack, discarded in the rush of activity, lay abandoned on the pavement. As I bent to retrieve it, I noticed a lump of dark material had been roughly shoved beneath the pack. I threw my book bag strap over one shoulder and reached for the wadded-up material, which I now recognized as the black leather jacket. Shit.
"Finn's jacket," Lexi explained. "He put it under your head as a pillow after you fell."
"After I fell? That's the story you're going with?"
"Well, I guess I may have been slightly at fault," she admitted, her cheeks flushing pink.
"Slightly? Lexi, are you kidding me? You completely..."
"Wait, did you just say the boy who carried me was Finn? As in, the Finn you nearly killed me by chasing?" I asked, somewhat shocked.
"Yes," Lexi murmured dreamily. "Isn't he such a gentleman?"
"I could think of a few other choice names for him, like asshole, douchebag..."
"Brooklyn!"
"What? He was such a dick to me."
"He saved your life!"
She stared me down indignantly, hands planted firmly on her hips in a show of intimidation.
"Lex, I hit my head. I wasn't exactly dying," I pointed out.
"You are impossible," she huffed. "Only you could be literally swept off your feet by the most attractive man on this campus and remain completely unaffected. You know, sometimes I think you're an alien."
She tilted her head and peered down at me through narrowed eyes, as if contemplating the odds that I was, in fact, an extraterrestrial. I simply shrugged and started walking toward campus, knowing she'd soon fall into step. Lexi had never understood my interactions with boys. It was highly doubtful she'd start now. To me, it wasn't worth making yourself vulnerable for the sake of intimacy. Or worse, letting some boy own a piece of you only to inevitably break it. Most of Lexi's relationships stopped just short of her boy of the month whipping out his package and peeing all over her to mark his territory. And yet, somehow, in her mind, this translated to romance. Then again, Lexi wholeheartedly believed in things like soulmates, true love, happy endings. I didn't. Humans aren't meant to be monogamous creatures. Most people would probably disagree, but then, most people would also be overlooking the ever-increasing divorce and infidelity rates. Why anyone would choose to rush into something with a 50% chance of failure was incomprehensible to me. Personally, I'd prefer to stick with my own definition. Marriage. Noun. Betting someone half your stuff that you'll love them forever. In high school, different boys had asked me on dates, and, mostly to appease Lexi, I'd gone out with them. But after a while, they'd all realized that I could never give them what they were looking for.
I'd never belong to them. Never wear their letter jackets or hold their hands in the hallway or decorate their lockers on game day. Because I'd never be tempted enough to even consider becoming emotionally involved. I understood perfectly the benefits of pure physical attraction. It always seemed like fate or evolution had played a cruel joke on me. I was probably the one girl in the world who didn't want a boy's commitment, yet every guy I dated seemed to expect one from me. I'd tried to explain this to Lexi many times, but she didn't understand. To her, any prospect of love, no matter how dim, was worth pursuing. Unfortunately for me, her mentality mirrored that of the high school majority, and I'd quickly earned the charming title of Ice Bitch from the male population, or at least from those who'd tried, unsuccessfully, to date me. The girls in my class tended to call me by a slew of even less flattering names, but I didn't really give a shit that they thought I was a slut. Lexi was still muttering under her breath about my astonishing lack of gratitude toward Finn when we parted ways at the criminology building. Apparently, as the only girl on campus who didn't turn to putty in his hands, I was a freak of nature, destined to die alone with thousands of cats. At least, I'm pretty sure that's what Lexi mumbled as she sauntered off toward the art studio. Walking into my first classroom, I realized that Finn's leather jacket was still clenched in my right hand. Not knowing what else to do with it, I shoved it into my backpack. It was a tight fit, barely zipping closed with the bulky jacket trapped inside. Examining it, I sighed. I knew by carrying this, I'd look like one of the stereotypical freshmen, easily picked out of the crowd by their bulging, textbook-laden bags at the beginning of every semester. After weighing the pros and cons of that unpleasant scenario, I hastily removed my notebooks from the pack, leaving only the jacket inside. Much better, I observed, breathing a sigh of relief and settling into a seat in the middle of the large lecture hall. The rest of my day passed without incident. With the exception of a handful of stares drawn by the bandage on my temple, I was able to fly mostly below the radar. My classes were, as expected, boring reiterations of the syllabus and a discussion of course expectations. Criminal justice and sociology each had several hundred students enrolled and were graded on a bell curve, so they'd be easy A's for me. Public speaking would be a different matter. With only 20 students, the professor made it clear that hiding out in the back row wasn't an option. She'd even forced us to make juvenile folded paper signs, prominently displaying our names on our desks like we were in the second grade. Of course, she immediately noticed mine and decided to torture me in front of the class. It was just that kind of day, after all. "Your name is Brooklyn?" she exclaimed, her voice artificially interested. "How unique! Is there any significance to it?" This question was not new to me. Year after year of elementary school teachers had wondered the same thing. Somehow, I just assumed I'd escape it when I got to college. Then again, I also thought I'd escape bubbly, mothering teachers. Was this simpering woman seriously an accredited professor? "Oh, yes, I guess there is," I shrugged, uncomfortable under the weighted stares of the entire class. "My mother named me Brooklyn because that's where she and my father met." Translation, that's where he knocked her up. I purposefully gave her as few details as possible, knowing it was best to discourage any further questions about my parentage. Disappointed, she frowned slightly before turning to interrogate someone else. I relaxed, looked at the clock above the door, and proceeded to count the minutes until the end of class. Back at my apartment that night, John Mayer crooned through my speakers as I danced and sang my way around the kitchen, gathering ingredients for dinner. The front door opened and Lexi strolled in, a Starbucks cup in each hand. "One venti non-fat chai tea latte as promised," Lexi said. smiling as she handed me the steaming cup.
Forgive me?
Forgiven, I agreed, happily sipping my chai.
What's for dinner?
How do you feel about veggie lasagna?
Sounds perfect. How's your head?
She asked, grimacing slightly. It's fine. I took some Advil, and I can barely feel it anymore.
Great, because we're going out tonight, Lexi announced.
It's Monday night. I have two classes tomorrow, Lex. I'm not going out.
Please, she whined, making puppy dog eyes. There's a band playing at Sticks tonight, and they're supposed to be amazing. We have to go.
You don't even like going to see bands, and you definitely don't like Sticks, I noted, remembering her reaction to the dark, crowded club the first and only time we'd ever gone there.
So, who is he? I inquired casually, between sips of chai.
Who's who? She asked, playing innocent.
Who is the guy who talked you into going out tonight? I said, calling her out on her bullshit.
I knew I'd hit my mark when her cheeks flamed to match the exact shade of her hair.
Okay, fine, you got me, she admitted, not meeting my eyes. There's this guy in my American Lit class. He may or may not have mentioned being there tonight.
But why do I have to go with you? I complained.
Brooklyn Grace Turner, you know I can't just go alone. You're my wing woman. Plus, you don't want me walking home by myself, do you?
She begged, batting her lashes at me.
I'll owe you big time.
You almost killed me this morning. You already owe me, Lex, I reminded her.
Yeah, but you already forgave me for that. Please come with me, Brooke.
Her baby blue eyes were practically glistening with fake tears. Even if I agreed to come, which I haven't, there's still the matter of the giant bruise on my forehead.
The swelling has completely gone down, and I'll work my magic on your hair and makeup. No one will even notice once I'm through with you, she promised.
Fine, I muttered, knowing I was only prolonging the inevitable by holding out. Once Lexi made up her mind about something, it was nearly impossible to deter her.
Yes! You are the absolute best, she squealed, throwing her arms around my neck. You won't regret this, I swear.
I know, I agreed, smiling as a thought occurred to me. 'Cause you're buying every round. Chapter 3. Small Packages. What's this guy's name, anyway? I yelled in Lexi's ear, trying to be heard over the thumping bass. The band had yet to make an appearance, and Sticks pulsed with the computerized sounds of electronic music. The dance floor was mobbed with bodies, and Lexi and I pushed our way through the crush to the bar. The bartender was swamped, racing back and forth to fill drink orders.
What did you say?
Lexi shouted back at me, smoothing her red bob and adjusting her cleavage before trying to flag down the bartender. Finally managing to grab his attention, she ordered 2 vodka cranberries and slapped a 10 down on the bar.
Keep the change, she winked at him when he placed the drinks in front of her.
Handing one to me, she led the way toward the front of the dance floor, as close as we could get to the stage. She turned when we reached our destination, holding her drink out to me in salute.
Cheers, bitch, to sophomore year, she declared, playfully bumping her cup into mine.
And to fake IDs, I agreed, laughing. I sipped my drink, refreshingly cold in the damp heat of the club, and looked up as the stage lights began to blink, signaling the band's arrival.
Finally, Lexi yelled. Tyler's the drummer, by the way.
Ah, so that was her mystery American Lit man's name. And it explained our ridiculously close proximity to the stage. I tugged uncomfortably on the short black lace dress I'd let Lexi talk me into wearing. I had to admit, though, she'd done wonders with my hair and makeup. My long waves were artfully pinned up around my head, with carefully selected tendrils hanging down to frame my face. As for the bruise,
Lexi had kept her word and made it disappear beneath layers of expensive foundation and bronzer. The dark shadows beneath my eyes, permanent remnants from my sleepless nights, would only be discernible under intense scrutiny. The stage lights came up suddenly, illuminating the platform and blinding me temporarily. When my vision cleared, I saw four men silhouetted against the backlit stage. Slowly, the full house lights came up, revealing the band members. My eyes tracked appreciatively up the lead singer's body, starting at the black combat boots near eye level, up past the black denim-clad thighs, and finally settling on the well-sculpted chest, filling out a plain black V-neck. An elegant tattoo neatly cuffed one of his biceps and disappeared up under his shirt, a tribal whirl of indiscernible patterns that immediately captured my attention and had me fantasizing about tracing my fingers along the swirling labyrinth of ink. "Oh, shit," I heard Lexi mutter beside me. Apparently, I wasn't alone in my appreciation of the band, and my slow perusal hadn't even reached his face yet. With that thought, I stopped blatantly ogling his shoulder muscles and moved my gaze higher. I stopped breathing. Yes, it was certainly an attractive face, more than simply attractive, if I were honest with myself. He was beautiful, with dark eyes, a chiseled jawline, and a wickedly sexy smile playing at the corner of his mouth. The same mouth that had insulted me less than 24 hours ago. Because I was looking up at Finn, and Finn was staring straight back at me. He mostly looked surprised, but undercurrents of amusement and smug satisfaction played out across his face as he recognized me and my palpable discomfort. The asshole had obviously just caught me in the process of slowly undressing his body with my eyes, and he couldn't be happier about it. Crap. I'm sure he registered my look of shock and confusion before I managed to break away from his smug gaze, turning to glare at Lexi. She looked just as blindsided as I felt.
I swear, I had no idea he was in the band, Brooklyn. I never would have made you come if I'd known.
I'd filled Lexi in earlier while she applied my makeup, rehashing all the patronizing remarks he'd made, and ultimately concluding that he was a condescending jerk who didn't deserve any more of my time. "Maybe he won't notice us," I lied futilely, knowing he'd spotted me immediately. Finn's voice crackled over the microphone, startling my attention back to the stage.
"Hey, everyone, welcome to Styx. We're Apophobic Treason, and we're here to liven up your Monday. Make some noise, people."
The crowd roared back at him.
"I said, make some fucking noise."
The cheers that erupted were even louder than before. His presence alone seemed to make most of the girls in the audience go into heat. They were elbowing closer to the stage, pushing out their cleavage, and screaming Finn's name like he was Tom Cruise or something. And I don't mean that because I think Tom Cruise is attractive. More so because he's a crazy religious zealot, and these girls were acting like a horde of cult-like Scientologist worshippers. I rolled my eyes at their pathetically transparent ploys for attention.
"Before we begin our set tonight, I just want to issue a little public service announcement on behalf of our beloved university," he drawled sarcastically into the mic. Then, looking down directly at me, he continued, "Apparently, the fire hydrants have been really acting up today, so watch where you step as you stumble home tonight."
The audience laughed like it was the funniest thing they'd ever heard. I'm not sure why they did, since it wouldn't have made sense to anyone in the club except Lexi and me. Half of them were probably too drunk to notice, and the other half were undoubtedly too busy picturing Finn naked to comprehend his words. As Finn laughed into the mic at his own joke, I glared up at him. He sent an infuriating wink back at me before turning to the crowd and launching into an incredibly energetic set.
"Well," Lexi said, gulping, "he definitely noticed us."
Crap. Do you want to leave?
Yes, I desperately wanted to leave. I had no desire to stay here and be mocked for the second time today by an egotistical jackass. But I was sure that was exactly what he was expecting me to do. Run home, too embarrassed by his comments to stay at Styx. Well, I wasn't about to give him the satisfaction of being right, and I sure as hell wasn't about to let him chase me away. Plus, if I left, Lexi's night would be ruined too. I just wouldn't make eye contact with him again, I resolved. It would be fine. No, screw him. We're staying. Maybe just not, so close to the stage, I responded, bracing my shoulders and quickly downing the remainder of my drink. And I'm definitely going to need another round.
That can be arranged, Lexi smirked, grabbing my hand and tugging me in the direction of the bar.
We maneuvered our way out of the crowd, which was now writhing along in harmony with Finn's voice. To my surprise, he actually sounded great, covering one of my favorite Dave Matthews songs, his raspy voice complementing the lyrics perfectly.
Tyler looks so cute back there behind his drums. And there's nothing bad about a man who knows how to use his hands like that.
Lexi sighed in adoration as we reached the bar, angling her body to look back at the stage.
Such dexterity!
This morning you were desperately in love with Finn, I reminded her, ordering us another round.
Ugh, lead singers are so egotistical. They just want to talk about themselves all the time. Who does that? She wondered.
Oh, I can think of a few people, I laughed, raising an eyebrow at her.
Shut up! I do not talk about myself all the time, and that's beside the point. This morning he was beyond rude to me. He actually snatched my phone right out of my hand.
I continued to chuckle, turning to accept our drinks from the bartender. Holding out a 10, I looked at him questioningly when he didn't take it from my hand.
These are on the house, he said, smiling at me.
Oh, thanks, I replied, surprised at the gesture. I took the drinks and passed one to Lexi. You didn't have to do that.
I know, but I wanted to. I'm Tim, by the way.
He held his hand out for me to shake. He was good-looking, definitely cute enough to distract me from my life for a few hours. Maybe I'd let him take me home when the bar closed. Brooklyn, I responded, placing my hand in his.
Like the city?
No, they actually named the city after me, I joked, rolling my eyes.
Wait, he said, clearly confused. Are you serious? Is it like a family name or something?
Thanks for the drink, Tim, I said, removing my hand from his grasp and trying desperately to keep a straight face. The giggles finally burst out as I walked away from the bar, Lexi in tow. She broke away from her Tyler-induced fangirl adoration long enough to look down at me.
What's so funny? And why aren't you back there flirting with that bartender? He was cute, and you totally could have milked him for free drinks all night.
He was dumb as a doorpost, Lex.
Your standards are way too high, she complained.
Lexi, he thought I was serious when I told him a well-known historical borough of New York City is named after me, not vice versa.
Okay, so maybe he's not the brightest bulb in the box, but it's not like you're looking for a relationship anyway, she reminded me, fully aware of my dating policies.
True, but I like them to have at least above a fourth grade vocabulary and reading level if I'm going to have to spend any amount of time with them.
That's probably a good benchmark, Lexi noted, giggling.
By this time, we'd made our way back to the dance floor, a good distance from the stage, but still close enough for Lexi to shamelessly ogle Tyler. The set was lively and upbeat, a mix of well-known cover songs and some unknown stuff that I assumed were their originals. Soon, our alcohol had kicked in and we were dancing wildly with the rest of the crowd, mouthing the words along with Finn as he crooned into the mic.
"Crash into me," he sang. "Crash into me," the crowd echoed. I looked up from dancing for the first time, taking in the sight of the stage, and immediately felt Finn's weighty stare on me. My eyes locked with his across the sea of people, and the breath caught in my throat. He was attractive, and he knew it. Worse, there was a heartless edge to him that told me he used his face as a weapon, bending the world to his will one sorority girl at a time. It almost hurt to look at him, like staring directly at a solar eclipse, something I knew I shouldn't watch, that could potentially damage me in the long run, but was so beautiful that I couldn't quite tear my eyes away. In that moment, it seemed like he was singing only to me. Everyone else faded away as I became enthralled by his eyes, the lyrics, the deep rasp of his voice. Damn it, he was good. No wonder the Sorostitutes didn't stand a chance.
"Brooklyn, hello! Come back to Earth, girl!" Lexi laughed, pulling me out of my reverie.
"Sorry," I said, forcing a smile. "I must be drunker than I thought."
"Well, that just means it's time for another round," Lexi exclaimed, heading off in the direction of the bar before I could protest.
The song ended just as we reached the bar. Over the appreciative roar of the crowd, I faintly heard Finn announce that the band was taking a quick break. Tim immediately noticed our return and walked toward us, smiling and ignoring the other girls who were trying to place drink orders.
"Back again?" he said, grinning as if I'd come solely to visit him rather than get a refill.
"Ah, yes, Tim. My decision to return was based on an uncontrollable need to see you again. The plethora of alcohol bottles lining the shelves behind you had absolutely nothing to do with it."
"We need another round," I said, playing along and plastering on a smile. "Two shots of tequila, please, with salt and limes if you've got 'em."
"Coming right up, babe."
"Babe, really?"
There were few things I hated more than pet names. I mentally gagged before turning to look at Lexi.
"How does my hair look? Is it too frizzy?" she whispered quickly.
"It's perfect, as always," I said, briefly scanning her red bob. "Why do you ask?"
"Because Tyler is walking right toward us. Don't look, idiot," she scolded, smacking my upper arm when I peered over her shoulder to spot the approaching drummer.
"Geez, calm down, Lex," I said, rubbing my arm. "You didn't have to hit me so hard."
Lexi ignored me, suddenly throwing her head back and laughing hysterically in an attempt to grab Tyler's attention. Her loud, albeit false, laughter succeeded in drawing his eyes, and he immediately beelined toward us.
"Lexi, you made it," he smiled, evidently happy to see her.
"Oh, yeah. I mean, Brooklyn wanted to go out, so I said I'd come," she shrugged, happily throwing me under the bus in her attempts to appear nonchalant. Tyler's gaze shifted over to me.
"You're Brooklyn, I assume?" Tyler asked.
"Guilty," I said. "And you are?"
As if Lexi hasn't gushed about you ad nauseam for the past 5 hours.
"Tyler," he said. "I'm in the band. Drums."
Tim had finally returned with lime slices and a salt shaker, saving me from making any small talk. He poured out 4 shots instead of the 2 I'd requested, lining them up in front of us.
"Go big or go home, ladies," he grinned in challenge.
"Tim, we really only wanted the 1 round, I said, peeved that he was either A, trying to get us drunk, or B, incapable of following a simple drink order.
"Oh, come on," he said. "Don't be such a pussy."
Oh, no, he did not just call me a pussy. I grabbed my 1st shot, throwing it back and chasing it quickly with 1 of the lime slices. Placing the empty glass upside down on the bar, I reached for the 2 shot, fully prepared to throw it in Tim's cocky face. I'd endured more than enough of his bullshit for 1 night. As my fingers grazed the shot glass, a hand launched over my shoulder and plucked it from my grasp. I watched, stunned, as the hand carried the tequila around me and out of sight.
Confused and slightly pissed that my drink-throwing plans had been undermined, I spun around to confront the shot thief. Oh, perfect. This night just keeps improving. I glared as Finn threw back my tequila. He winced and leaned forward to grab a slice of lime off the bar, completely invading my personal space with his reach. His chest grazed mine as he placed the empty shot glass and lime rind back on the countertop.
"Well, that certainly wasn't Patron," he complained,
still standing far too close for my liking.
"That was my shot," I said, shocked at his audacity.
"There's two more sitting right there from what I can see," he noted indifferently.
"Those are Lexi's, and that isn't exactly my point here."
"It doesn't really look like Lexi is interested in them. In fact, she's a bit preoccupied at the moment."
He jerked his head to the side, toward Lexi and Tyler, who were busy making out a few feet away.
"Jesus, that was fast," I muttered.
Finn laughed, and I felt it rumble through his chest, which was still pressed against mine. Placing both hands on his midsection, I pushed hard, trying to shift him away from me. He didn't budge, even when I put considerable weight behind the shove.
"Back off!" I snapped, exasperated by my inability to move him. "This isn't funny!"
"Fine, fine," he chuckled,
putting both hands up in a submissive gesture and taking a step back.
"It's not my fault you're such a shrimp."
"A shrimp? What is this, the first grade?"
Rolling my eyes, I turned back to the bar and reached for another tequila shot.
"Are you always so friendly, or am I a special case?" he asked sarcastically.
"What can I say? Egotistical jerks really bring out the best in me."
"Ouch, that hurts," he drawled, moving up next to me at the bar and grabbing the other shot glass. "You know, I'm only a jerk because I've been hiding my deep emotional pain. You want to come back to my place and hear about it after the show? I can open up to you, cry on your shoulder, and then afterwards you can comfort me, preferably naked."
"Does this shit ever actually work for you?" I asked, genuinely curious. "Do girls really fall for the emotionally damaged jackass ploy?"
"Usually," he laughed, completely unashamed by his methods. "My dashing good looks and endless charm don't hurt either."
"Charm?" I snorted. "Ha!"
"I am, in fact, very charming," he insisted. "Most of the time."
"So I'm just, what did you call it? A special case, then?" I laughed, preparing to throw back my shot.
"Wait, don't you want some salt for that? I'll let you lick it off my hand and everything."
"Pass. Who knows where those hands have been?" I grimaced, throwing my head back and letting the tequila burn a path down my throat. A slow warmth was beginning to spread through my body, swirling out from my stomach to fill each limb.
Finn burst into laughter at my comment.
"You're funny," he said, still chuckling. "And you can hold your own. We're going to be great friends, I can tell."
"Friends? I don't even like you."
"Yes, you do," he scoffed, tossing back his tequila. "Everyone likes me."
"I can't imagine why."
"So much sass in such a very small package," he laughed, looking down at me.
"Speaking of very small packages," I said, glancing at his belt buckle suggestively, "don't you have a set to finish?" Ignoring my insinuation, Finn once again leaned forward into my space. I immediately moved away until my upper back brushed against the bar. His eyes traveled leisurely down the length of my body and then back up to meet mine. Reaching out to touch my temple, he gently traced a finger over the now concealed bruise.
"Brooklyn," he whispered, his face inches from mine.
"What?"
He was unnervingly close, leaving me no room to move away.
"You still owe me that t-shirt," he said, grinning broadly, his demeanor switching from smoldering to playful in less than a second.
"You want me to get you a t-shirt for your own band? You can get a new one whenever you want. There is no way in hell I'm paying for it, I growled. And you just drank two of my shots, so we're even.
You didn't even pay for those shots, he noted. So technically...
Oh, just shut up.
He laughed, turning away from me and taking a few steps toward the entwined form that was Lexi and Tyler.
Yo, Ty, we've got a set to finish, man, he called. Break's over.
Ty broke away from Lexi and shot a lengthy glare in Finn's direction, finally turning back to whisper something in her ear. Whatever it was had her beaming brightly. She gave him a final lingering kiss before he walked away.
Oh, and Brooklyn?
Finn called out to me as he followed Tyler to the stage, ignoring the desperate girls flocking around him.
Why don't you get yourself an apophobic treason shirt and wear it all day tomorrow to commemorate our new friendship? Then we can call it even.
I flipped him off in response.
He laughed. As usual, he was completely unaffected by my disdain, shaking his head back and forth as he walked away. Lexi wandered over, still slightly flushed from her blatant PDA session.
Well, you two looked friendly, I laughed.
Oh, my God, Lexi whispered, a goofy grin spreading across her face. I think I'm in love.
Lexi, you've known the boy for less than 24 hours, I noted.
Time didn't matter to Romeo and Juliet, she sighed dreamily. They only knew each other a few days.
Yes, and look how that turned out. They both ended up dead. Have we learned nothing from history? I asked incredulously.
You're such a cynic, Brooke, she said. One day someone will break down all those walls you've surrounded yourself with and worm his way into your heart. Then you'll understand.
I chose to ignore that comment. Clearly, Lexi was now a certified love guru. By this point, the band members had regrouped on stage and were preparing to finish their set. I welcomed the distraction, glad for a brief respite in what I was sure to be a night of endless, lovesick Tyler worship.
Can we go home now? I asked.
What? No! We have to stay for the end of the set, Brooke. Plus, Tyler said he'd see me after the show.
At this point, I was too tired to argue with her. Last night's lack of sleep was finally catching up to me, as were those final two shots. I grabbed her hand and led her back to the dance floor, maneuvering past several drunken couples shamelessly hooking up against the club walls. After pulling us into the heart of the throng, Lexi and I began to dance. Within minutes, two cookie-cutter blonde frat boys had joined us. Mine, either Jason or James, it was hard to hear over the music, snaked one arm around my waist and pulled my body flush against his, grinding his hips into mine. He was cute enough, but I wasn't in the mood to be mauled on the dance floor tonight. I looked at Lexi with wide eyes, signaling for her intervention. Her eyes flared with understanding, and she moved away from her own frat boy, grabbed my hand, and pulled me from Jason James's grasp. Quickly leading me toward the stage, Lexi tossed a parting wink and a goodbye wave over her shoulder in the boy's direction. Thanks, I said, when we were safely hidden from their view.
Don't thank me. It's in the wingwoman job description, she said, looping one arm around me. I'm so happy we came tonight.
I'm glad you're enjoying yourself.
Aren't you? What were you and Finn talking about at the bar?
Mostly we just insulted one another, I said. I'm surprised you came up for air long enough to notice.
Very funny, Lexi muttered.
The rest of the set flew by. I was feeling the full effects of the tequila, and everything was slightly fuzzy around the edges. Before I knew it, Lexi was tugging on my arm, waving a hand in front of my face to capture my attention.
Brooklyn, how drunk are you?
She looked sternly down at me, hands planted firmly on her hips.
We're leaving now. The set's over. Come on, she ordered.
I trailed behind her, one hand loosely clasped in hers, and we were carried along with the crowd as they poured out of the club doors and into the night. Come on, drunkie, Lexi chided as we cleared the exit, leading me around a corner and down a dim alley between buildings. A few yards into the alley, a side exit door opened into the narrow passageway. Tyler and the other band members were laughing as they walked outside, lugging instruments and stereo equipment into a waiting van.
Tyler!
Lexi called out, announcing our arrival. He finished storing his drums in the trunk before turning to greet us, swooping Lexi up into his arms and spinning her around like a child.
Did you like the rest of the set?
Tyler asked, placing her back on her feet.
You were so good!
Lexi squealed. I began to tune them out, leaning back against the cool brick building and closing my eyes. I wanted nothing more than to crawl into my bed and sleep, even if it only was for a few brief hours. Drunk and exhausted, my legs felt almost as heavy as my eyelids, which had begun to drift closed of their own accord.
You look like shit, a voice said.
Cracking open one eye, I took in the sight of Finn standing directly in front of me, an amused smirk on his lips.
Thanks, I croaked. That's the look I was going for tonight. I meant you look exhausted and possibly wasted.
I let my eyes close again, trying to shut him out. The tequila thrummed through my veins, and I planted my palms flat against the brick to steady myself. Don't pretend you know me, I mumbled tiredly.
Do you need a ride home? I'd guess Lexi isn't leaving any time soon.
My eyes snapped open in surprise, fixing on his face. I'd come to expect asshole Finn. I wasn't quite sure what to do with an offer from chivalrous Finn. I looked over at the van, now completely packed with band equipment.
Where am I going to sit? The roof? I asked acerbically. Also, you've been drinking. I may be wasted, but I'm not stupid enough to climb into a car with you behind the wheel at the moment.
Relax. I'm not driving. It's Scott's van, he said, indicating the bass player leaning against the driver's side door. Come on, let's go tell Lexi you're leaving.
I don't even know you.
I'm not a serial killer, Brooklyn. Pinky promise, he chuckled.
He walked over to Tyler and Lexi, who were sitting on the back bumper, intermittently kissing and staring deeply into each other's eyes.
Ah, true lust, I thought sarcastically. Finn laughed, looking back at me. Shit, did I say that out loud?
Not one for PDA, huh? He asked.
Not really one for affection, generally speaking, I thought, this time managing to keep my drunken ramblings contained. I just shrugged and shouldered past him, making my way to Lexi.
Lex, I said, trying to pull her gaze from Tyler. I want to leave. I'm exhausted.
Okay, she murmured, not bothering to look up at me. I'm going home with Ty.
Fine, I snapped. Whatever. You're really campaigning for Friend of the Year, aren't you, Lex?
My voice dripped with sarcasm. She finally looked away from Tyler, startled by my harsh tone.
What the hell, Brooklyn? Don't be a bitch to me just because you're drunk and pissed off. Go home, she said.
Are you kidding me, Lexi? I'm the bitch in this scenario?
I was livid. How could she even call herself my friend? She was abandoning me to go hook up with some random guy after forcing me to come out against my will. I'd opened my mouth to really let her have it when a large hand slipped over my lips, effectively silencing me. Finn slowly dragged me around toward the front passenger seat, only removing his hand when I'd stopped trying to squirm out of his grasp and bite his fingers off.
What the hell, Finn? I snapped, glaring up at him. Who do you think you are?
I'm the guy who just saved your drunk ass from saying something you'd never be able to take back. She's your best friend, Brooklyn, he said, as if I needed a reminder. Yeah, she's being selfish tonight, but we all get selfish sometimes, so let it go. You have a ride home. You're not stranded.
Fine, I sighed, still pissed off, but unwilling to fight with anyone else tonight. I just want to go home. I didn't exactly feel comfortable going with him, but it was my only option, thanks to Lexi's abandonment.
Then let's get you there, he said, climbing into the passenger seat.
Scott was already situated at the wheel, tapping out a rhythm on the dashboard as he waited to leave.
Come on, Finn said,
reaching down to grab my upper arms and pulling me up into the van with seemingly little effort. Before I could protest, I was firmly settled on his lap and we were rolling out of the alleyway. I glanced in the rearview mirror as we pulled away. Lexi and Tyler were walking toward a beat-up blue sedan, stopping to make out every few steps. I snorted at the sight, too drunk to worry about being ladylike, and heard Finn chuckle in response. I was perched on his knees, my back ramrod straight with tension. His hands moved to stroke the sensitive area on the inside of my elbows, and he gently pulled me back to lie against his chest.
Relax, he whispered in my ear. I don't bite. Unless you're into that kind of thing, that is.
I elbowed him in the ribs, laughing softly despite myself. Reluctantly, I relaxed into him, letting my head fall back to rest on his shoulder blade. I had to admit, he was comfortable and warm.
How did you get to Sticks tonight? It's a pretty far walk from campus, he noted.
We took the bus, I explained sleepily, my eyes closing as my muscles slowly unclenched, releasing a day's worth of tension. The tequila, my exhaustion, and his radiating warmth joined forces, dragging me under and lulling me to sleep.
Hey, Brooklyn, wake up,
Finn's voice whispered, startling me back into consciousness.
We're at your house.
Groggily, I lifted my head from the crook of his neck and looked out the passenger window. Sure enough, we were parked outside the yellowing Victorian. Finn's arms were wrapped around my torso, holding me to his chest. While asleep, I'd snuggled close to his warmth, which left me in an extremely embarrassing predicament now that I was awake.
Oh, okay, I muttered.
Sure, my cheeks were on fire. Hopefully he couldn't tell in the darkness of the van. Awkwardly extracting myself from Finn's arms, I turned to Scott. Thank you for the ride. I really appreciate it. He nodded in response. I threw open the passenger door and scrambled off Finn's lap as quickly as my heels would allow. To my surprise, he jumped out after me.
What are you doing?
I asked nervously. You can't come in. Finn ignored me, turning back to Scott.
Give me 5 minutes, man. I'll be right back, he said,
shutting the passenger door. He looked down at me, frowning.
I'm walking you to your door, smartass. I promised I'd get you home, and I'm not leaving you at the curb dressed like that, as drunk as you are.
I'm fine. And what is that supposed to mean? I said, indicating my dress.
Never mind, he muttered, exasperated. Just come on.
He grabbed my arm and led me to the side stairway.
Do you even have your key? He asked doubtfully.
Yes, of course, I said, turning out of his view so I could retrieve the house key from its hiding spot in my bra.
Classy, he joked.
Easier than carrying a purse, I countered, without apology, shrugging and starting up the narrow stairway. I could hear him following me, laughing quietly under his breath as we ascended. Reaching the balcony, I unlocked the patio door and turned to face Finn. Thank you for getting me home safely, I said sincerely, somewhat amazed that I was now indebted to such a jerk. Or maybe that he was turning out to not be such a jerk after all. No problem, he said, smiling as though he could read my thoughts. This doesn't mean I like you, I decided, and we're definitely not friends.
Oh, yes, we are, Finn laughed. I'll see you soon.
Not likely, I disagreed.
Think what you want, he said, as if he knew something I didn't. Good night, Brooklyn.
Good night, I echoed. shutting the door between us and making my way, finally, to the comforting warmth of my bed. Chapter 4. Great Expectations. Tears tracked slowly down my face, dripping onto my pink Hello Kitty t-shirt and marring it with small wet blotches. I watched from the back seat as the man jerked the wheel sharply sideways, my head slamming roughly into the window when the car fishtailed around a corner. I whimpered under my breath, but he didn't hear me. I tried not to think about the parking lot, about Mommy. But I was scared, and I didn't want to stay back here anymore. And where were we going? And why so fast? I trembled and squeezed my eyes shut, praying silently that it was all a dream. Just a nightmare. Mommy will come in and wake me up any minute. I heard the sound of sirens behind us, and the bad man said a curse. I knew it was a bad word, because Mommy only ever said it when she was really upset, or when something got broken, and afterwards she always made me promise never to repeat it. Fuck! God damn it! The man was really angry, and maybe scared, too. He was sweating, and the car kept going faster, faster, faster. The sirens were getting closer. Suddenly, the man started turning the wheel wildly, sending us swerving through traffic. I heard the beeps of other cars and saw a red stoplight fly by overhead as we raced below. He was going too fast. Mommy never drove this fast. He was going to hurt me, just like he'd hurt her. I remembered the parking lot, watching Mommy fall to the ground like a rag doll. She wasn't going to get up. She'd never get up again. My small hands clenched into fists. This bad man had hurt Mommy. I was going to hurt him back. Without another thought, I launched my small body out of my booster seat and used all the strength I had to hit him in the face. He was surprised. He'd thought he was alone in the car. When my fist cracked across his temple, he yelled and lost his grip on the wheel. The car jolted, and I fell backwards onto my seat, clutching the booster straps tightly. Something big crashed into the front of our SUV, and then we were spinning, drifting in circles. The man wasn't holding the wheel anymore. His arms were covering his face as the front windows shattered and glass flew all around us. My head cracked sharply against my window once more, and this time I couldn't keep from crying out in pain. When we stopped moving, I opened my eyes. The man was bleeding and covered in glass, but he was alive. He was also looking at me, his expression full of shock and disbelief. My head hurt. I moved my hand up to touch it and sobbed. When I took my hand away, I saw that it was coated in bright red blood, like Mommy's blood in the parking lot. No, don't think about that. Don't think about Mommy. The sirens were all around us now. My head ached, and I wanted to go home. I wanted Mommy. The man brushed some of the glass shards from his jacket before reaching over to the passenger seat. He cursed again, then found what he was looking for. A gun. The gun he'd used on Mommy. Grasping it in one hand, he turned to look at me.
Come here, he ordered. You're gonna help me out of this mess, okay, kid? You help me, I won't hurt you. Got it?
I nodded and released the booster buckles with shaking hands. I tugged on my door handle, but it wouldn't budge. And before I could crawl over to try the opposite side, the man had lunged back and grabbed me. Dragging me over the console into the front seat with him, my bare arm scraped against the glass shards littering the driver's side. I screamed when a huge sharp piece got lodged in my collarbone, slashing deeply and releasing a torrent of blood.
Shut up, he growled.
His face was bleeding, and he was gripping my arm so tightly I knew it would leave behind a big bruise. I whimpered.
I said shut up! I wouldn't be in this mess if it weren't for you, you little shit. I was home free. They weren't gonna catch me. You fucked it all up. You made me crash.
He shook me roughly, and my teeth clacked together from the force. I didn't dare whimper this time, though. He opened his door slowly, holding me in front of him like a shield.
I've got a kid here, he screamed to the waiting police officers. Back the fuck off!
He slowly eased out of the car, keeping a vice-like grip around my midsection. My feet dangled in the air, unable to reach the ground. I felt something cold and metallic press against my temple. When we were out of the car, I saw that there were at least 10 police cars parked in a circle around us with their lights flashing. The front of Mommy's SUV was smashed in from where we'd hit the highway guardrail. It was getting harder to breathe. His arm was squeezing too tight around my chest. My lungs burned. My hair was wet with blood, and my pink T-shirt was stained bright red around my left collarbone. I could hear the police officers yelling at the bad man and him yelling back, but I couldn't concentrate on the words. Everything slowly turned to black as my vision cut out, and I faded into dark oblivion. The scream tore out of my throat, and I sat straight up in bed, gasping for breath and chilled to the bone. Taking calming breaths, I ran through my typical post-nightmare routine and gradually slowed my pounding heartbeat. A cursory glance at my cell phone informed me that it was almost 7 in the morning. Thankfully, the nightmare had held off until dawn this time, allowing me a few extra hours of much-needed rest. After making a cup of coffee, I grabbed my tattered copy of Gone with the Wind and propped open my bedroom window. A cool early morning breeze drifted in, and I looked around my room for a sweatshirt to slip on before heading out onto the roof. Unable to find one amidst my stacks of unsorted laundry and far too impatient to search further, I swiped Finn's leather jacket from its resting place on my desk chair and pulled my arms through the two long sleeves. The jacket dwarfed me with excess material, hanging down to mid-thigh, but I knew it would keep me warm outside in the chilly autumn dawn. Tucking my book under one arm and balancing a precariously full coffee mug, I maneuvered out the window and slid onto the roof. The morning sky was tinged pink with the sun's arrival, and a light breeze stirred the leaves into the arcing branches of the maple. I bent my knees, drawing my legs up to my chest and wrapping Finn's coat snugly around them. Fully cocooned in his jacket, I was enveloped by the scents of rich leather and the crisp apples of harvest time. Distressed by the idea of Finn invading my senses, I brought the mug to my nose and inhaled deeply, letting the rich coffee aroma push him from my mind. I took a sip and thought back over the events of the previous night. Miraculously, I'd escaped the typical after effects of a tequila binge and was hangover free. My cheeks flamed as I remembered the way I'd fallen asleep on Finn's lap on the drive home. How was it that every interaction I had with that boy left me embarrassed and irritated beyond measure? People didn't usually get under my skin so easily. In fact, they rarely even made an impression. It disturbed me that a boy I'd known for about a nanosecond could leave me feeling so rattled and vulnerable after a few brief encounters. Picking up my book, I traced a finger down its broken spine and flipped through the well-worn pages. I'd lost track long ago of how many times I'd read it. There was something about this particular story and the sweeping grandeur of the Old South that called to me, allowing me to escape from my own time and lose myself completely within the pages. Books had given me an escape during the long years when I'd needed most to forget. When I read, Brooklyn disappeared, and I became another girl in a different place at some other time. The sun crept slowly over the horizon, shooting warm yellow rays down through the abundantly leafed tree boughs and creating a kaleidoscope of shadows on my small perch. Flipping to a random page,
I read until my coffee was gone, and I heard the front door slam, announcing Lexi's return. Angling my head to the sky, I let the emerging morning sun warm my face and hoped the coming day would be better than yesterday. Wandering into the kitchen, I immediately spotted Lexi sprawled out on our sofa with one arm thrown over her eyes to block out the sun. I deposited my empty coffee mug in the dishwasher and made my way over to her, pulling her feet onto my lap as I sat at the end of the couch. "How was the walk of shame?" I asked, indicating the red dress she still wore from last night. Lexi pulled her hand from her face and propped herself up on her elbows to look at me.
"Actually, he drove me home, if you must know," she said, smiling. "And he said he'd come over tonight."
"So you had a good night, I take it?"
"Good doesn't begin to cover it," she squealed, before launching into an in-depth play-by-play of her entire evening.
I sat patiently, listening to her analysis of the things Tyler had said and done for a solid hour, before getting up to pour myself another cup of coffee. It looked like I was going to need it with the way this day was headed already.
"I'm sorry I left you," Lexi admitted. "I know I shouldn't have, but I just really like him, Brooklyn, and I knew Finn would get you home safe."
"You didn't even know Finn, Lex," I said, still slightly irritated by her selfishness. "He could have taken complete advantage of the situation."
"He's not a creep. You just haven't given him a chance," she insisted. "You're so hard on people, Brookie. You never let anyone in."
"That's not true." Okay, maybe it was kind of true.
"Brooklyn, I'm your best friend, and I still know virtually nothing about your home life or your childhood. And that's okay, because I love you. But you have to let somebody in eventually, or you'll end up alone."
I didn't respond. How had this conversation suddenly turned around on me? "Thanks, Dr. Phil. I really appreciate it," I snapped. "I'm going to take a shower." I pushed her legs off my lap and stormed out of the room, knowing I needed space to cool down and time to remind myself that she was only trying to look out for me. Back in my bedroom, I hopped in the shower and stood under the near scalding water, hoping somehow it could wash away the emotions swirling inside my head. A few moments later, my phone buzzed on my nightstand as I was pulling on a pair of jeans. I nearly tripped over my own feet in my hurry to answer the incoming call. The screen read, "Blocked number." I wondered vaguely who it was as I lifted the phone to my ear. "Hello?" I asked, slightly out of breath. When no one responded, I repeated myself, less patiently this time. "Hello? Is someone there?" I could hear someone breathing on the other end of the line, but they still didn't respond. "Who is this?" I demanded, growing angry as a chill raced up my spine. I could feel the fine hair coating my forearms beginning to prickle in alarm. The slow breathing continued. "I know you're there. I can hear you breathing," I pointed out. Still no response.
"Don't call here again, creep," I hissed into the phone, jabbing at the screen to end the call. First the nightmare, then a fight with Lexi, and now a disturbing prank caller. If this morning was any indication, it was going to be a long-ass day. That evening, I trudged home from campus in a relentless downpour. What had begun as a beautiful sunny day had quickly turned overcast as ominous storm clouds overtook the blue sky. I stepped out of my last class and, as if it had been waiting for me, the sky opened up and sent down buckets of rain that soaked through my jeans and thin t-shirt within minutes. Unequipped to handle the fast-forming puddles, my flimsy sandals continually skidded across the wet sidewalks as I sloshed through the streets. Of all days to forget my umbrella at home, of course it had to be today. As I hurried around the corner onto my street, I began to sense a presence behind me. It wasn't as if I could hear footsteps following me, since the pounding rain drowned out all sound. But I knew instinctively that someone was walking behind me. watching me. Without stopping, I cast a furtive glance over one shoulder and tried to see who it was. The heavy rain and thick cloud cover had darkened the sky, though I thought I could make out a shadowy form standing still on the sidewalk, about 20 yards behind me on the otherwise abandoned street. Who stands out on the street in weather like this? I began to walk faster, suddenly eager to get home for more reasons than just the rain. No doubt looking like a drowned cat, I cursed myself for not checking the weather forecast this morning and continued my waterlogged trudge. As soon as the dilapidated Victorian came into view, I bolted for the stairs and rushed inside, chilled to the bone and sopping wet. Rather than drip water all the way to my bedroom, I immediately peeled the t-shirt over my head and shimmied out of my sodden jeans, leaving them in a damp pile on the kitchen floor. Dropping my backpack beside the door, I walked into the living room in just my bra and panties and hurried toward my bedroom. My teeth were chattering with cold, and my hair was dripping, the long dark tendrils tangled and plastered around my torso. I couldn't get to the shower fast enough, desiring nothing more than to stand beneath the torrent and let the heat gradually sink back into my bones. A loud, appreciative whistle sounded from the couch and stopped me in my tracks. "Do you always walk around like that, or did you just know I was coming over?" I knew I shouldn't have gotten out of bed this morning. Finn lounged on my couch, completely relaxed, staring at me with an amused grin on his face. Throwing my hands in front of my chest, I tried to cover my most crucial girl parts, strategically rearranging my hair so it blocked his view of my chest. Miracle of miracles, I was wearing lacy boy shorts rather than one of my skimpier sets that left little to the imagination. "It was raining," I stammered, completely mortified by his presence, but damned if I was going to let it show. "What the hell are you doing in my house?" "I came over with Ty." He and Lexi disappeared into her room. "Oh," he glanced at his watch, "about a half hour ago." He was still grinning at me, clearly pleased with himself. "Fine, whatever. I'm going to shower." "Is that an open invitation?" he asked, waggling his dark eyebrows at me. An involuntary laugh burst from my lips before I could stop it. "You may well be the cockiest guy I have ever met," I decided, still laughing. "Thank you," he said with a laugh. "It wasn't a compliment," I shook my head, exasperated. "You do realize that you're ridiculous, right? And that it's never going to work on me?" "Sweetheart," he smirked, "it doesn't really matter what you think, so long as the rest of the female student body disagrees." His eyes continued to roam up and down the length of my body, and I promptly flipped him off. "Ass," I muttered, walking into my bedroom and firmly shutting and locking the door behind me. I wouldn't put it past Finn to simply barge in and hop in the shower with me. How could anyone seriously be attracted to him? Yes, I admit, he was godly to look at, and yes, he had that whole tortured musician vibe working for him, but his cocky attitude was a complete turn-off. After a long, scalding hot shower, I padded back out into the living room, dressed in my comfiest sweatpants and a tank top. My wet hair hung loose to my waist as I yanked a brush through it, trying to work out the snarls. Finn, still fully at ease on the sofa, didn't even look up from the television as I made my approach. "You're still here?" I asked, irritated that he was taking up the entire couch. His eyes flicked briefly away from the screen, making a swift appraisal of my sweats, lack of makeup, and wet hair before returning to his show. "I told you, I'm waiting for Ty," he said. "Are you always so cranky?" "Only when random boys barge into my home, proposition me, and then take up all the room on my couch," I retorted. "Can you at least scoot over?" He sighed, as if completely inconvenienced by my request, before shifting his legs off the cushions and onto the floor. "So sorry to disturb you," I said, settling onto the couch with a deep sigh of resignation.
You should be, he smirked. I was pretty comfy.
Ugh, I groaned, chucking a pillow at his head. You are beyond obnoxious.
He easily dodged my throw before settling back into the cushions, an amused smile tugging at the corner of his mouth. I huffed, exasperated, before crossing my arms over my chest and glaring at him. If he had a superpower, it wouldn't be his singing ability or even his irresistible attractiveness. It would, undoubtedly, be his ability to piss me off like no one else.
Don't pout, he mocked. It promotes wrinkles.
I chose to ignore him, turning my attention to the movie and attempting to relax. To my great surprise, we were able to stop bickering long enough for a comfortable silence to descend. Aside from the occasional giggle or moan emanating from the direction of Lexi's room, the apartment was still and quiet. After almost an hour had passed, I heard the rhythm of Finn's breathing change, growing deeper and steadier with each inhale. Sure enough, when I glanced over, he was fast asleep.
He looked peaceful, almost childlike. His angular cheekbones were softened by the fading afternoon light. His dark hair was tousled. His mouth, usually firmly fixed in a condescending smile, was slackened with sleep. I couldn't help but grin at the sight of him, curled up like a young boy with one arm pillowed beneath his head. Seeing him like this, I could understand why he was so appealing to the hordes of women who constantly trailed in his wake, vying for a minute of his attention. Hell, if he suddenly lost the ability to speak, I'd probably be right there with them. I knew, though, that the sweet sleeping boy before me was an illusion. When he woke, his mouth would quickly twist into a smirk, and he'd morph back into an entitled, arrogant jerk. That Adonis-like physique was a total waste when it came packaged with a personality like his. At least, that's what I tried to tell myself. I shut off the movie and quietly moved from the couch to the kitchen, so as not to disturb him. Grabbing my iPod off the counter, I slipped in my headphones and flipped to a favorite artist. It was nearly impossible for me to cook, clean, or do any kind of housework without music. My stomach growled as I began to gather dinner ingredients. Having skipped lunch earlier in my rush to get to class, I was craving Italian, preferably some of my homemade chicken parmigiana. 20 minutes later, the aroma of freshly breaded cutlets and boiling pasta wafted around the kitchen. I'd made more than a single serving, figuring that Lexi and Tyler would be hungry after working up an appetite all afternoon. Laughing softly at the thought, I cleaned up my mess, loading dirty plates into the dishwasher and wiping down the countertops as Bon Iver hummed in my ears. I jumped about a foot when I finally looked up and noticed Finn perched on a bar stool, watching me with that unwavering cobalt gaze. "Jesus, you scared the shit out of me," I exclaimed, pulling my headphones from my ears. Annoyingly, my heart was racing and my breaths were much shallower than normal. I planted my hands on my hips and frowned at him. "You can't just sneak up on people like that."
"Sorry,"
Finn yawned, completely unconcerned with my distress. He still looked rumpled and heavy-eyed from his nap.
"Is that chicken parm I smell?"
He inhaled deeply, clearly appreciative of the smells wafting from the oven.
"I think I just fell in love with you."
I chuckled, turning back to the sink and continuing to rinse the dishes. Finn swiped my iPod off the counter, scrolling through my list of artists and occasionally grunting in what I assumed was a grudging approval of my eclectic music tastes.
"Well, I'm definitely surprised," he admitted, after perusing for several minutes. "I'd pegged you as more of a Taylor Swift, Justin Bieber kind of girl."
I snorted.